Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 53 of the Business Handmade podcast.
I'm Kim.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is Arthur, our cat, sitting with us.
Yeah, if you hear any purring, he cannot leave us alone right now.
So he's joining us for a very special podcast episode where we talk to Aiden Convoy of Global Sawdust. Aiden is fairly new to the craft scene, but he took a chance on us and it's all worked out. It's been a budding relationship. It's been amazing. We've gotten to know him and his mom and dad, a little bit more about his business. And he's really learned so much in the short time that he's been doing this. You know, he started his woodworking career in high school, or probably even middle school, he mentioned. And as he went on through high school and even into college, it developed into a business, and he kind of learned business skills. There was a lot of trial and error. And so most of this episode kind of focuses on almost a case study of like what he started with, what he learned along the way, how he was able to pivot and change, you know, ideas, come up with new ways of doing things. And it's just the final version of his product.
Yeah, it's just so impressive too, because he's still in college. I mean, the way that he speaks about his work and his passion for his work is like he's been doing it for 15 years. But he is still very young and learning a lot. And he is okay with taking feedback, and he's okay with being a little bit frustrated, because he is still in the learning phase, very much so.
And I think that's one of the most admirable qualities about Aiden, is that he's come into this business just completely with an open mind. You know, and he talks about that a lot in different areas. Open mind about design, open mind about, you know, where his strengths and weaknesses are, and where the people in his family that he jokingly talks about being his employees, but he brings members of his family into the business in different ways to kind of leverage their strengths where maybe he falls short. And he's not afraid to talk about that and recognize, like, he's got more of the creative side, but his mom is more of the customer service side, and his brother is more of the IT side. So it all kind of plays into how the business runs. And I think that's really something that's so important for someone that's starting a business, because it can be very overwhelming to think about all of the behind the scenes stuff that goes into the business. And to think, like, I have to do this all by myself, and I've never done any of these things. Maybe you've been crafting for a while, but you haven't done the other stuff, registering for a trademark, etc. So to be able to leverage those people, I think, is really important. And one of the other really great things that Aiden mentioned, he talked about finding your niche and prepping for a show, which is a huge question that we hear all the time from makers that are just getting started, you know, not knowing how much inventory they need or what type of inventory. So for him to really have that insight on this at such an early stage in his business, I think, is invaluable.
And I think I have personally more appreciation for his story, because we met him last year at one of our shows, and
his first show.
Yeah, little did we know it was his first show, and all of this kind of learning had transpired beforehand. And we've been working with him ever since for the past 6 or 8 months. And just this past weekend, we had Spring Fest at Tranquility Farms, where he even said, you know, it was one of his best shows, you know, selling a lot of his merchandise, and just how much he learned leading up to that show. And then also how much he learned at that show to now bring to the next shows that he goes to.
And I think what's really interesting too is that Aiden has been with us for 2 shows at Tranquility Farms. He did Oktoberfest in the fall and Spring Fest, obviously, this in the spring last weekend. Or I guess by the time this airs, it'll be a couple weekends, but in the spring, in May. And so to be able to compare the differences and similarities between 2 different events that are tailored to be similar style events, both, you know, beer, gourmet food, artisan market on a farm, but understanding like what sold really well. So he has comparative data at this point. And he says that Oktoberfest was his top show, and that this was a close second, but he's learning which products were a bigger hit, I guess, with the demographic of people that were shopping. He also has data because he's done both Saturday and Sunday. So he understands, you know, who's coming out on a Sunday morning versus who was there on Saturday night, and what products are they looking for. So it's helping him to formulate, like, what does that that plays into his schedule for the rest of the year and years to come, what he's going to do as he kind of comes up with his show schedule and what he needs to prep ahead of time to bring it to those shows.
It just makes me so much more excited for the next two shows that we have at Tranquility Farms, because I'm thinking back to last Oktoberfest and how much fun we had just running a first show there, and then how much fun we had this past weekend at Springfest, because even though it was, you know, a follow-on to last year's show, it was so different. Yes. We really did a lot of things different for spring than we did last fall, and then we're also going to be doing Wine Jazz and an Artisan Market at Tranquility Farms on June 5th and 6th, and then our second annual Oktoberfest in September.
Yeah, so, and those are each a totally different vibe. And, it, you know, we've said it before on the podcast that Oktoberfest, we're so fortunate that we have a really good relationship with Kevin of James on Maine, who was on one of our podcast episodes, and Matt Ziegler of Ziegmeister Brewing, who was also one of our podcast guests. We have a great relationship that's built on so much trust with them, because we put together that Oktoberfest in 3 weeks. We didn't know what was going to happen with the quarantine and pandemic and, you know, gathering guidelines and all of that. We wanted to do it safely. So we put that together in 3 weeks, and I think it really blew people away. So then it set the stage for what that would look like to do future events at Tranquility. And so far,
with more planning too.
Right. More lead time, but it's still been fairly consistent in having a really good turnout and being something that it's like a no-brainer. Of course, we're going to continue to do shows at Tranquility because they have great turnout. You know, the vendors are happy. The food's amazing. The music is great. The beer is great. And then it gives us that opportunity to kind of branch out a little bit. You know, for the Wine Jazz and Artisan Festival, we're bringing in Unionville Vineyards for that. We're not working with a brewery on that. But because we have now a couple of shows under our belt at Tranquility, we know what works really well, and we know what we can change out to make it feel different. The farm itself is very different seasonally, obviously. Right. You know, fall and the activities they have geared for fall are very different than the spring activities, and it just changes throughout the year. So the landscape itself is changing, what the farm offers changes, and then what we're bringing changes. But overall, they've all been wildly successful shows.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's our next show, so if you're interested in checking it out, you definitely can. We're selling tickets, so they're available now, and you can just go to winejazznj.com to get your tickets. So we're still doing ticketed sessions, you know, even though the outdoor capacity has been lifted in New Jersey, we're still going to make sure that, you know, we're safer than having everybody come at the same time.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I think it helps space people out. It's a more enjoyable experience for the customers. And they also get a commemorative glass that they can use for their wine tasting too. So that's included in their ticket. So it kind of makes sense to do the tickets.
Yep.
But yeah, that show is coming up really soon. And if you're interested in being a maker, one of our artists exhibiting there, you can certainly do that too.
Yep, we have space, booth space is still available for Saturday, June 5th and Sunday, June 6th.
Yeah.
So what else? What else is happening?
I feel like that's a lot of things happening.
And then the next weekend we'll be at Ziegmeister for their 5th anniversary, which is a party all its own.
Yeah, and that's going to be really cool because it's their 5th anniversary. Did you say that already? 5th anniversary?
Yeah, V. on their poster, it's just a big V because it's going to be fun.
So V doesn't stand for fun. But
it stands for five.
And five starts with an F, and so does one. The anniversary party at Ziegmeister is going to be different this year than what we've done in the past because they've branched out their outdoor beer garden. They actually own another lot adjacent to their property where they're going to set up a huge stage and beer trucks and move all of the brewery service down to that lot. So you won't be getting service from inside the brewery like you typically would. It's just going to be a giant party, essentially. So it's going to be a fun time. It's a little bit different than in the past where beer's been inside and we've been outside in the lot, which has still been successful, but just a little bit of a different model. And this is going to be more like along the lines of Oktoberfest or Springfest, where you can get your drink and shop at the same time and enjoy food. We're going to have some food trucks there, so it's going to be fun.
And they're only really 15 minutes away from each other, so you can have your wine the first weekend and your beer the next weekend.
Just get a hotel for the week. Stay out there.
I mean, maybe I should.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask you if you wanted to do that the other day, actually.
So funny. So yes, without further ado, please enjoy this next episode with Aiden of Global Sawdust, and hopefully we'll see you at an event up soon. Hey Aiden, how are you?
I'm doing good, Kevin. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're super happy to have you.
Yeah, it's good. We just saw you and now we get to talk to you. So this is awesome.
Yeah, it's good timing.
Yeah.
So please, introduce yourself to the people who are listening and tell us about your handmade business.
So my name is Aiden Convoy. I am a college student who last summer officially started my business called Global Sawdust. And Global Sawdust is a furniture and home furnishings company. So for craft fairs and things like that that Kim and Kevin host, I make a lot of cutting boards, serving boards. A very big thing I'm sure we'll get to talk about more is bottle openers. Those are very popular. And just a whole
Yeah.
bunch of other things. So that's the type of stuff that I do. I work with a lot of domestic and exotic hardwoods, and I don't use any paints or stains, which is a really interesting thing because there's so many amazing colors that nature makes that a lot of people don't know about because most people are just familiar with domestic woods like walnut or cherry or maple, but there's so many other really cool and vibrant colors that come from South America or Africa or something like that.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I think all of the other products that I've seen that are not yours have been stained, right? Or painted or
Yeah, I
something.
think so. Or and you know, honestly, I didn't even realize that you didn't have any kind of finish to them. I guess it's the wax
Yeah.
probably that you use, but I was thinking,
The oil.
oh, oil, but I was thinking like, oh my gosh, these do look like they not painted, but they look stained. So it's really cool.
Yeah, and that's how just how vibrant the colors are. It's very it depends on of course, like what kind of wood you're using and which piece, because each piece is going to vary in color. I was using a piece of Purple Heart a few weeks ago, and Purple Heart's a very vibrant, dark purple color. And this piece I had was a little more of the lavender shade, which I wasn't super happy with. So I ended up not using it for the project I had optioned for, and I just went out and tried to find a different piece because the way Purple Heart works is if you leave it in the sun long enough, it brings more of the purple to the surface. But that also
Yeah.
has to it also changes the flatness sometimes if it gets a little warping because of the heat from the sun. So it's a little you have to be a little careful with it when you try and do that.
And it's so impressive how much you know because you just kind of started this whole journey in your handmade business. So I know you started kind of in college really getting an appreciation for woodworking. But it seems like the way that you're talking, that you've been doing it for years and years.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the just research, I think. I think just I've watched a lot of so I took woodworking in high school, and we'll start here. I took woodworking in high school and took it for 4 years. I had the same shop teacher who's a Jim Pepe, and we were just really connected through woodworking. And I'd taken woodworking a little bit in like middle school, but we weren't getting into anything like too complicated in middle school. Is more just like a CO2 car or something like that. You like
Yeah.
cut it out of like a balsa block and then you paint it. Anything too complicated. But as I got into high school, we had our first initial projects. One was an oven hook, so a hook that you could pull on an oven rack out, and that was out of like a pine or something, just like a very inexpensive wood that young students, like freshmen, can. But
Yeah.
went along, we started to like the other assigned projects of the year, and we got into like a jewelry box, and we were able to really just try out different methods on how to make that. I got to see a lot of different ways and things that I could do, and that's what really kicked the whole ball off with the whole woodworking enjoyment, I guess I could say.
Cool. And at what point did you decide that you wanted to make it into your business?
So fast forward a couple years. So junior year in high school, the shop at my high school was getting a complete remodel. They were pulling out all the machines. They were taping up and repairing all the floors. They were putting in new walls, new dust collection system. It was really just getting a complete redesign. And the other room, so there were two rooms, the woodworking room and then the STEM, and STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. In the STEM room, we're just getting a complete redesign. So we were out of the shop for a good, I'd say 3/4 of the year, my junior year. So
Wow.
there wasn't a lot of shop time, which I was really disappointed about. But what was gained from that was a whole bunch of new machinery. And they also put in something called a CNC machine. So a CNC machine is a computerized router. And a router has we put a variety of different bits in it. So this bit that we put in it was just a straight spiral cutting bit that went into this router. And you could program the router to cut any pattern, cut any depth. It was just a computerized program that you could play around.
Right.
One of the things that I was excited to try and experiment with. So then, fast forwarding to senior year, I had taken all levels of woodworking that my school offered. I'd taken one, two, and three, but I didn't want to not be in the wood shop, especially in my senior year. So I talked to my shop teacher, Mr. Pepe, and I said, "Mr. Pepe, I really want to be able to work in the shop this year. What kind of an option do we have?" So he said, "I think we can create a new class just so you can be able to be in the shop." So
Wow, that's
between,
awesome.
yeah, so between him and the guidance counselor that I was assigned to, they really worked around it, really create this class for me. I was the only kid in the class. Kind of started with another woods class, a woods three class. So I was with a lot of my friends, but in my own like kind of workload. And the workload that I was given, it was very free. I didn't have a lot of requirements. It was more just a lot of like I could experiment where I wanted to. I could try a bunch of new techniques. And I didn't really have to make designed projects per se for the curriculum because it was like a new class and I was the only one taking it because not that many people are taking three levels of woods and then continuing for or looking for a fourth.
Yeah, you have a lot of freedom there.
Yeah, so we created this class, and fast forwarding another few months into the year, it was coming up to my dad's birthday. And my mom had been at, I think it was either TJ Maxx or some other big box store, and she had brought home a bottle opener. And it was basically just the bottle opener mount stuck onto a stained piece of pine or something with a little basket at the bottom. It was like a wicker basket. And she's like, "I'm thinking about giving this to dad for his birthday." She's like, "What do you think of it?" And I said to her, I said, "To be honest with you, I don't think it's that nice of a gift." I said, "I bet if I tried a couple of things out, I could create something a little bit nicer than that." And
That's
she said,
so
"Yeah."
cool.
She said, "Yeah, it's not for a few weeks." So she's like, "Feel free to mess around, see what you can find." So I went to school the following day, and I knew I had a basic design style, like size that I had in mind. So I thought I'd do around 8.5 inches high by 3.5 inches wide, and maybe I'd glue a couple of pieces together and make it into like look kind of like a cutting board or something, and then I could put the mount on. So that was, I could say that was like maybe stage one. So I made this, and it was just a piece of wood with the mount on it. And then as I was looking at it, I thought to myself, there's a little problem here because the one that my mom bought had a basket on it. And I'm like, now I don't have anywhere for the caps to go. They're just gonna fall everywhere. So I said, how can I adjust this a little bit? And I'm like, I don't want to put a basket on. So I went on to YouTube. And I was typing in ways to catch mat, like catch bottle caps. And one of the ways was I saw a key rack that somebody had made for when you come in the door, and they had placed magnets into the back so you could hang your keys on the magnet. And I said, I think that bottle caps, obviously they're metal, they're probably magnetic. That would be something cool to try here. So I went on to Amazon and I ordered, no, not Amazon. I went on to eBay and I ordered a couple of magnets, and I think I bought four of them at that first time, and I got them in there, and I talked to my, said, insert this thing into the back of this piece of wood, and he's like, well, we can probably take, let's call it a bit, which is just a big circle. He's like, we can probably take this and we can drill it in, and let's try. So we tried this Forstner bit, and a Forstner bit is just a circle and then a a sharp point in the middle to be able to grab not just the outside side of the wood too, so it doesn't rattle around and shake the piece. But the inside point is about an eighth of an inch longer than the outside. So whatever you cut the outside of the circle, there's going to be a deeper point going through. That this magnet, our point, the other side because it was too deep to be able to fit. So like we have to fit a better. So this goes back to the upgrades that we had gotten for the wood shop. We said we have a CNC machine here. Let's see if we can program this to cut the specific circle that we need. So he played around with the computer a little bit. We measured the magnet and we ran a bunch of test pieces. And finally we got one to fit just perfectly. And we put it in and we tested throwing a cap at it and it stuck right to the surface. We're like, this is awesome. And he's like, yeah, this is really good. He's like, but how are we going to like hang it on the wall now? And I'm like, that's a really good point that I had not thought of. And I'm like, I know we want to hang it at least on a wall, but I'm thinking if we hung it on a fridge too, that would be kind of a cool idea. Mm-hmm. So then we looked at my design a little bit and we said, what if we added a magnet to the top section and then we added a magnet on top of our round magnet at the bottom. So then we'd have two more magnets that face the opposite direction. Maybe we could connect them to a fridge. And he's like, maybe for hanging it on the wall, you could do what's called a keyhole. And it literally just looks like a keyhole and you can put a screw in it and slide it up. And he's like, maybe that's how we can mount it on the wall. And I said, fantastic idea. Let's give this a try. So we got the magnets. We made our little program. We designed it and we put it in. And this was the first official prototype of this bottle opener that I had.
That's awesome.
I hand delivered it in time for my dad's birthday, and he was just ecstatic. And it worked pretty well. There were definitely a couple of design flaws that needed to be addressed, and I'll explain that a little more. But this was version one. So it was sliding a little bit on the fridge because the magnet strong. The finish on it wasn't tremendous because I hadn't done a lot of finishing work as of yet through my high school career. And then just a couple of different things with the sanding. It wasn't as smooth as I would have liked. But as far as version one goes, I was very happy with just the initial design.
And you know what? Just hearing you talk about the process and how you thought about all of those things, and you could just tell how passionate you were in the progress that you were making, you know, step by step, that of course this would translate so well to you doing it repeatedly and constantly improving on designs and then ultimately selling, you know, to a bunch of people. And I know that you have a portion of your business that's like custom design too. So that makes sense that, you know, you like the process of figuring things out and how things will either fit together better or make a better end result. So I love hearing that whole like puzzle piece that you started talking about.
Yeah, and that's exactly the thing. It was the problem solving of it that really just appealed to me, and I just really enjoyed trying to solve this problem that I was having because I couldn't gift this not so nice bottle opener and know that I had experience with woodworking and give this not so nice piece of wood. So then I took my design and I just sticked with my initial version. And I made, I think, four or five of them. And my mom, who we like to joke and call our Northeast sales rep. So she took them to her school and she was showing a couple of her friends and they said, can we buy one? And she brought them home and she told me, she's like, some of my friends at school are interested in buying them. And she's like, what would you consider selling them for? And this was the first time I had ever had to price an item out before. And I had absolutely no idea what anything would cost. So I think
that's like the hardest thing for a business owner to try to figure out what is the value of your time, because you obviously know the cost of your materials, or you can at least calculate it, even if you don't know it right off the top of your head. But then the value of your time. And then it's like, okay, well, am I priced fairly within, you know, that market of other people that are selling what I'm selling, and, you know, being priced fairly, but also does it does it compensate you for your time?
Yeah, exactly. So I calculated up all my material costs and I thought about it and I said, maybe $30 would be a good point for this. And my mom said, I think that's a nice little small item that wouldn't be very expensive. It's something everybody could afford and mm-hmm. it's something that a lot of people would want. So she said, I think $30 would be a good spot for this. So she went back and she came home empty-handed except for $30 in four different $30 payments. So I think $100 or whatever that is. So I was ecstatic as a 17-year-old kid getting $100. I was ecstatic, especially when I was able to create something that people seemed to really enjoy.
Yeah.
So I talked to my shop teacher and I said, I sold these 4 bottle openers. I'm like, do you think you'd be okay if I just spent the next couple of weeks making another couple and see if I can sell those? He's like, absolutely. I think you should experiment with that. I think that's a really good avenue. He's like, feel free to do whatever you want with that.
Really supportive of him too, because I mean, not that we ever go into high school with the mindset of what we're necessarily going to do forever. You know, we have to start thinking about it, of course. But that was really insightful of him as a teacher to get you to start thinking in terms of business skills and how to actually turn that into something that generates money for you. So that's actually really admirable on his part and something that you were able to take away as a skill you'll use forever.
Yeah, he was really great about it. We were really able to connect extremely well. We're still very close friends. He was just at one of the show 2 weeks ago. He actually attended.
Nice.
So it's always really great to see him. He comes over the house sometimes and we sit in the shop and just talk. But he has a business background before he was a teacher. So he's in tune with the whole business aspect of things. And that's why he was very eager just to let me experiment when I was getting positive feedback from other people at my mom's school.
That's so cool. So, we were going to ask you, what are some of the skills you've had to learn quickly or even in the process, but I think you've already touched on all of that, really just troubleshooting, trying something, trial and error, see if it works. If it doesn't work, what can we do to make this different? And then having your different prototypes that have kind of evolved over time. And how have your bottle openers changed from those first versions that you were selling?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So my initial version 1, I sold about, I'd say 20 of them before I made a design change. So the people at my mom's school were so supportive. They just absolutely, and it's almost as looking back on it, I almost wish I could make them a different one as after all the different versions.
Right.
So version 1 was the magnets were a little bit underpowered. So then going into version 2, the magnets were also a little underpowered, but the original magnets I could no longer get from the distributor I had been buying from. So I had to try and find new magnets, and those magnets weren't very good. They didn't fit in the holes very well, so the holes were a little big for them. So it just looked a little sloppy. And then going into version 3, I changed out the top magnet this time, but I kept the bottom magnet. And that was a little better. It definitely got a lot stronger from that. And then version 4, I changed the 1.5-inch diameter magnets that I had been using for the main pull to the front, as well as the pull to the fridge on the bottom half of the opener. Those were getting a little bit too pricey, close to almost $4 a magnet. So that was going to throw it close to $15 in total magnets just for one opener. And that was a little bit unfeasible. So I decided to find a similar magnet of similar power, but it was only 1.25 inches. So then I was able to use that one. And I also got a top magnet at 1.125. So it was a little bit thicker, a little bit stronger. So I added those on. And then we had determined from cracking bottles in our own kitchen that the actual mount part was not at an optimal angle. So when you went to crack your bottle, you were a little bit too high. So if you did it too quickly, you might get a little bit of shoot back on you. And that had been like a little feedback I'd gotten from my aunt, who, because a lot of people, when they're just cracking a bottle, they're just going to crack it as quickly as possible. We had been accustomed to cracking it slower, so there weren't really any like splashback of liquid when we crack a bottle. But for
you needed somebody in the field to tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the like real world feedback that I was able to make a design change and look for a different mount. So as I was reading reviews, I realized that other people were also having this issue. So they directed me, or the reviews directed me, to another website that was selling a similar mount. It looked kind of different, but it had a much more easy angle, so people could just stick their bottle in and crack it as fast as they wanted, but there wouldn't be a splashback because of the angle.
Yeah. So as you learned how to create a product, how to price the product, at what point were you like, you know, I need to try to sell these in person?
Yeah. So I had been selling them a ton in high school because I had access to our machine shop. And then once I graduated high school, I had tried to start building up. This was as I was graduating high school. I was trying to build up the machinery in my garage. So I got a like a little jointer, a little job site table saw. But I was coming off the quality of cuts I was used to was on a very expensive, like industrial school type machine.
Yeah.
So when I switched to a small job site table saw that was only a few $100s, I was not getting nearly the same quality of cuts. So when I would glue all my pieces together, I would get little gaps here and there.
Yeah.
And I was not very happy with the quality of that.
Yeah, work. That's so frustrating.
So I had to hold off a little bit on making those until around the end of my freshman year of college, that I had been saving up so I could get one of these really nice industrial table saws that I had been using at my high school and even in some of my college courses. So I was saving up, and finally I found one. It was on Craigslist, and it was in the University of Delaware. So it was down in Delaware. So I took my dad and we drove down there, and we somehow figured out how to load this into the minivan. I'm still a little bit confused on how we actually figured that out, because this machine is well over 1,000 pounds, but somehow we figured it out. So we got back and I was able to get everything set up. And then I just started making things, not really with the purpose of selling per se, but just making them for family and friends. If like an aunt or something wanted to gift one, I made something for that. And it wasn't until this past year, 2020, when we got sent home in the beginning of March for spring break. And this is when COVID started.
Right.
So we got sent home from college in the beginning of spring break. And then we were told a few days after that we weren't going to return. So I said, I've got a lot of free time now that I wasn't expecting, because I won't have to be at school. I'll be home in my home shop, and I can really just build as much as I want. So my brother came up with the idea that we should actually trademark this business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we went ahead and we went through the process of trademarking and getting all like our logo trademarked, our name trademarked, and all that different stuff. And then we started to develop a website. And then this is when my mom started looking for different craft events that I could go and attend. And we had never done any sort of craft event. We had never sold any type of thing at a show before. And I'd have to bring her into this conversation a little bit. She's not here right now. But somehow she stumbled across you guys, Market Space Vendors. And she's like, I think this could be a really nice thing. It's nice and local. We won't have to travel too far. She's like, it'll give you a little bit of experience going to craft fairs and things like this. So I'm like, absolutely. I'm like, let's try it out. Let's sign up for an event. And I think the dates are melding together in my head, because I forget what my first event was with
you. Yeah, guys. I was going to say, we definitely met you probably last fall, I'd say. So it's been, you know, probably 6 months. And, you know, it feels like it's been so much longer, honestly, because you know that anytime I see you and your mom, I end up talking to you guys forever. Yeah. So, you know, it feels like I've known you for a very long time, but I think it's probably last fall, right?
Yeah, it has to
yeah,
be.
I think that's definitely accurate. I think it was after the summer season had died off and I was looking for events for the fall
yeah.
that I actually got my first event with you guys in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And going into this event, I didn't really know what the kind of reaction I would get from people was. I didn't know how people would appreciate the work or anything. And there was a lot of trial and error with how we were going to set up our table, how we were going to get business cards and get care instructions for cutting boards and everything.
It's almost starting from scratch again, because you had built this idea of what you were doing in your home shop. And then when you're like face to face with customers at your own kind of display and you merchandise it, you know, it's learning all of those new skills from square one.
Exactly. Transition into actually meeting and talking to people and making people. So going into this first show, I had just my regular cutting boards, cheese boards, and bottle openers and things. I think I had maybe some coasters because my mom wanted some more smaller, inexpensive items that people could just pick up. And
she's your sales rep and your merchandiser. I love it.
Exactly. Yes. And that's her job. She comes up with a lot of the ideas on things she thinks I should make, and as well as selling. I love bringing her to these events because, first of all, she loves to talk to people. So that doesn't hurt when she is chatting people up. And she's always just been very supportive of the entire thing. So she's great to bring along. She's a very productive
I think that's really important. When you think about being a small business owner and being a crafter, a lot of people that are in this business are so focused on the craft that by the time it comes down to the actual business skills of knowing QuickBooks and understanding, what your revenue is and then having the people skills to talk to people, all that kind of gets exhausting, running social media, having a website, all of that becomes almost too much because a lot of people who have that artistic brain are no, I want to create. I don't want to do any of that business side of things. And so that's why it's really great that you have someone like your mom that you're able to work with, because you can almost play off of each other's strengths. So maybe where you can sit there and talk to people about the actual wood that you're using, the process, where they can feel your passion for it, your mom can be the one that brings them into your booth and starts showing them things, talking to them, because she knows a little bit about the wood and about what you're doing, but also just in general being more conversational maybe. And having herself removed from being the creator,
right.
Because we're all really harsh on ourselves when we're the maker of something and we're very critical, but she's proud of you. So she's also able to kind of talk about how amazing things are and really hype it up for you.
Yeah. You hit on some really awesome points there. And one of the biggest things being is as the nitty gritty of the actual business. I just like to go out and make. So I've been lucky enough that my brother has been very willing and given up a lot of his time to be able to help me handle a lot of the business that's not actually the building part. And that being answering emails, setting up all the payments and things, and actually building my website. He's been integral in just going through and building my website up to a point where we could actually make it usable and make it be able to ship things out of. So he's been an unbelievable help with this whole process. I don't think I'd be able to do half the amount of things if I didn't have somebody on the back end doing all the work that nobody actually sees.
Yeah, that's so important. And that was going to be one of my questions too, because your website is insanely impressive. I go on there from time to time just to grab pictures or to look around, see what's new. And everything is set up so well and so professionally that every time I'm looking at something new and I'm like, wow, I can't believe you just started this business and it looks like a website that was professionally made for years.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I think he'd be ecstatic to be able to hear that too. I'll tell him about that later.
Yeah, definitely.
He has put in so much effort into just the back end build and I guess he's hitting creative zones that he didn't know were possible with the actual building of this whole thing. It's been great for him because he's been able to get a whole new skill of just computer-based design and building an entire website from scratch, which is unbelievably impressive because that's not something I think that I could maybe I could do it if I set my mind to it, but I really can't sit still and be on a computer. And that's where he really has patience to do that.
That's really cool because you sound like a family of creatives, but just in very different ways. And so his creativity is through web design. And it's great that you have that collaborative relationship too, where he can come to you and say, okay, does this function the way you need it to? What changes do we need to make? How does this appeal to a customer? And how does this work for ordering and things like that? So you can give him that feedback. You still have the input as the business owner, but that's kind of his expertise. And then you can, it frees you up to focus on the parts of the business that you really enjoy.
Yes, we like to joke that I've got a whole household of pro bono employees.
Right, and then your dad is like the guy that helps you load everything in and out. So
yeah, he's the transporter. He likes to attend the shows too. So he's always a big help loading and unloading everything. So that it's really all hands on deck. And even my dog Hunter, just being in all the pictures and being like almost another face of the business, like a cute little face.
He's your mascot. That's awesome.
Exactly.
So since you've been doing the in-person shows, what have been kind of your favorite parts of doing them? And then seeing that experience of like selling the things that you've made in advance, how does that feel for you compared to taking custom orders and doing something from scratch for someone?
Yeah. So there is a whole different level of just pride that you feel when somebody orders something online versus when you actually meet somebody at a show and they express just how much they appreciate the detail and the craftsmanship of the actual work. So at every show, there's always a bunch of people that come by and just really, really appreciate just the amount of time and the work that goes into it. Because for a lot of people that might just look at it from the outside, it's just woodworking. It's like a little hobby that you learn in high school and kind of forget about it. But as you get into the more like nitty-gritty details of it, there's just a lot of time and effort that needs to go into making a piece so smooth, so like just nice overall. So it's really just getting appreciation from people that really understand it is huge.
I love that because when we love either running or going to these artisan markets and walking around and seeing people interacting with the makers of the products. And we see that firsthand. We see how impressed or appreciative they are at hearing the story about the product, you know, and then ultimately getting to take it home.
And I think it's cool too, when you meet certain makers will use, like, for example, if they work with wood and they have scrap pieces of wood, they'll just keep small pieces of scrap wood at their display to be able to engage their customer and hand them the wood and be like, here, like, hold this, look at this, see the colors, you know. And it also came to mind that we met a maker who does Adirondack chairs out of fire hoses. And at the show that we saw him, he had cut up pieces of fire hose that I guess were all scrap from what he was making. And he handed them out to our kids. And you know, it's like a little thing like that where it engages. You'll always remember that. See, like, this is years later and I'm talking about this guy with his fire hoses. And it gives people that insight into your business. And it's like, it's just a cool, like, thing to really engage customers.
Yeah. And a lot of people that come through, they're going to be familiar with, like, the just domestic wood. So they'll be familiar with cherry, walnut, hard maple, oak, just like very basic things like that. And not that those are overly basic because they're absolutely beautiful woods, but when you show somebody all the exotic woods and the fact that these are actually the natural colors and not a painted or stained thing, that's one of like the big pitches that my mom likes to do when she's talking to people. She's like, no paints and no stains, because it's almost unbelievable that you can get a piece that is blight blood red or a piece that is just such dark purple. Or something that it has like almost like a tiger stripe look to it. Like there's just so much variety. It's really quite unbelievable.
Yeah, and we haven't even started talking about the furniture that you make too, because I've seen tables that are phenomenal from you. And my question to you is, what's the hardest piece that you've made so far?
Yeah, so going off that, I do a lot of the cutting boards and things. What I really enjoy to do is more of the furniture type items, which luckily I've been able to start to do a lot more of. And it was a couple of weeks ago that I actually started. Not, I think I should go back. It wasn't a couple of weeks ago. It was about a month and a half ago that I got commissioned to make a red oak desk. And I went rack back and forth with the client about it, overall sizing, and he had decided that since he's going to be spending the money on a desk, he just wants to go all out with it. So he's like, "We're going to make this 7 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 2 inches thick." So this was by far the biggest overall tabletop that I had actually gone to build, and for my garage shop, this was absolutely pushing the maximum limit for sizing that I could do. And one of the processes of the table is I had to add breadboard ends to it. So I had to stand the table up vertically so I could use my router and create channels that I could put in floating tenons for these breadboard ends. And I was way up in the ceiling. I was on a weird angle, and I was definitely maxed out for my garage. My garage shop, 7 feet was definitely the max.
And
And
I kind
then
of love that no part of you was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like you were just like, yes, let's make this 7 foot by 7 foot by
yeah,
3 foot desk. No
exactly.
problem.
That wasn't even a question in my mind. Like when I assigned, like I took the job and we actually closed on all the details. It didn't even cross my mind whether I could do the actual size or not. Because I was thinking just I've done this type of table before, but just not on this big of a scale. So that didn't even cross my mind. And then going through the process of running it through my table saw to just clean up the edges and everything by myself, because normally I'd ask somebody for help, but for this one, I didn't have anybody to help. Nobody was home. So it was just me.
And you were also 7 feet up in the air, so.
Yeah, I was also 7 feet up in the air, and so then after I took it down from being up in the air, and I had to just run it flat through the saw and pushing it through, and I only had about 2.5 to 3 feet of actual table space on the infeed, and then once I pushed it past the infeed onto the other side, where was it supposed to go? I guess I figured that out. It was a little finicky, but it worked out, I think.
That's awesome. And what about your favorite piece that you've made so far? Something that was like special to you?
So I think my favorite piece would be we recently bought, my parents purchased a house up in Cape Cod. This was back in 2016, and they wanted a coffee table to kind of just make it their own, make it official, and make it like pretty much like just seal it as being their house. This was a house that we had rented for 20 years leading up to this point. And the previous owner, had reached out to us and said, "I know you guys love the house so much. We'd be willing to work a deal with you before we actually list it on the market." So they jumped on that opportunity because we had loved the house. We'd been staying there for so many years, and we almost viewed it as our own. So they were able to purchase that, and then we were talking, and they're like, "I want you to build this coffee table to kind of like, make the house officially ours and just sum it all up." So I went with a mission style coffee table, and I used some white oak from a white oak tree that had fallen in our yard about 6 years previously, and then we had gotten milled up into actual lumber. So we had a little bit of old Tappan with it, and old Tappan is where my business is located, and then a little bit of Cape Cod, which is where the actual house is. So it was a sentimental piece because it was a tree from our yard that we had lived here, like we've lived here my entire life, and my dad grew up actually across the street,
Oh, that's cool.
and then he moved into his he bought his friend's house across the street, and he moved it over here. So it was sentimental, and it was just an overall. It was a fun build. It was one of my first furniture projects, and it came out just really tremendously.
That's
Yeah, that's
amazing.
awesome. And it connects the two. I love that. So, of all the things that you've learned in such a short period of time, what do you think would be most valuable to share with other makers, people who are just starting their business or maybe are getting you know, the wheels turning for starting a business?
I think the one thing that I know I had to work around was at the beginning when I was making things, I was getting a little bit frustrated because I wasn't really selling things. I was making a ton, and I had like a ton of stuff just lying around. And this was, and what I had not realized at the time was the reason I'm not really selling things is because I'm not really getting out there. I wasn't going to any shows. It was kind of more just word of mouth. I didn't really have a website, so there was no really way for people to see my actual work and see if it was any good or not. But I didn't see that. I just saw I wasn't really selling anything. I was putting all this time, all this effort into making these things, and nobody was really appreciating it. But when I went to my, like, our first show with you guys, and I could actually see people start to appreciate it in person, and once they saw, like, the actual item and they really enjoyed it, and then it was almost immediate. They were, how much is this? Can I buy this? And once I started to actually sell a few items to people that were really just appreciative of the craftsmanship, that's when it really just started to make it all feel worth it. So I think looking past and not getting hung up on not making sales is a huge thing, because sales will come. You just have to get in front of people that are going to appreciate your work. And even Absolutely. Now I have to remember that, because sometimes it might be an off, like a down week, not getting a lot of orders or things. And then I go to a show like we had the other weekend, and over the course of the 2 days, I made 25 sales.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Which was a huge show for me. It was one, I think it was probably my top two. I think the only one that beat that out was Oktoberfest last fall.
That's awesome.
But it was, because you might not be getting a lot of orders because people just can't see it, can't visualize it. But as soon as you go in person and you can talk to people and they can see your passion for it and everything, that's when it really just starts to become apparent that this maybe could be something that you could do and people are going to appreciate.
Yeah.
That's absolutely perfect. I think that advice is perfect for anyone. I know we said gear it towards like somebody just starting, but even somebody that's been doing this for 15 years, I think that still is applicable, because there is still frustrations and there are still periods where you might not be selling as much as you want to be selling. But you're right, sales will come and you're focusing on your craft. And once you put yourself out there and continue to be optimistic, you know,
and it find all your falls niche, into place. Right? Yeah, yeah, you have to find your audience. You know, you can sign up to do 100 shows and only two of those are, you know, areas that work for you or people that appreciate what you make. You know, it might not be the right show for you. And I think it takes a lot of people multiple years to figure that out. So for you, it's amazing that you've learned so much in such a short period of time and have kind of figured out, you know, what works for you right now. So I think that's excellent advice.
Yeah. And I think just another thing is just having a diversity of items with a diversity of prices.
Yeah.
Because if I look back at this past show, when I made 25 sales over the 2 days, if I took out a lot of the low priced items, like a bottle opener or a coaster set, and I just strictly focused on which most woodworkers do would be just like selling cutting boards. If I just counted those sales, maybe I only made 6 out of my 25 sales would be like big ticket items, like big ticket cutting boards. So that like changes completely the whole dynamic of how you thought the 2 days went and how successful that you see the show as. But if you add in all the more like reasonably priced, like lower priced items, and you add in all those sales, that's what turns like an okay weekend into just a tremendous weekend.
Right. Yeah, I think it's important to have that variety, have the variety of price points. And then it does, you know, sometimes you have to weigh, like, does it make more sense for you to sell 3 items that are, you know, $500 or 20 items that are $50, or, you know, and like try to figure out what that math is. Like, do you want to get rid of more inventory? What is your threshold? Mm-hmm. And once you have a handle on that, I think it helps you better gauge the success of a show and how to prep for it. I know that's a huge question that we get from makers that are just starting out. Like, how much do I bring? How much inventory do I bring to my first show? And that's really hard to figure out until you can kind of get a sense of like, well, what is your goal? What do you want to achieve? And what is that demographic of shopper really looking for? Is there any historical data that you can get from the promoter of the show that will tell you like, you know, cutting boards sold really well, bottle openers didn't, or, you know, something like that. Generally, they'll have an idea, at least if they've never had a maker that has your type of product, they can speak to that, you know, just giving you some kind of context to better prepare.
Yeah, I think that's great, a great point. And I think it also is a great point about the just the different like clientele from different areas, what they're going to be interested in. That's a big thing. And with the inventory type things, it's never a bad thing to have too much inventory, because there's always another show going to be coming up again that you can just bring the inventory you didn't sell to the next show. I had actually a problem with the bottle openers this past show because I didn't bring enough. And this was the first time that I hadn't brought enough. I had enough of the American flag style ones, but I didn't have enough of just the regular like domestic cutting board style ones. Mm-hmm. And those sold out very quickly. Well, I think it was in the morning of the second day that those were gone. And I probably could have sold a few more if I'd brought them, but I hadn't planned that far ahead.
Well, now you have data. Get to Excel and put that in an Excel sheet.
So tell us and tell all the listeners, obviously, your website and your social media where they can see all of your work.
Yeah, so all my stuff can be found at Global, G-L-O-B-A-L, Sawdust, S-A-W-D-U-S-T.com. And Global Sawdust can also be found for my Instagram or my Facebook. So all those things, it's very simple. It's just Global Sawdust. There's no numbers. There's no anything like that.
Makes it really easy to find you.
The original Global Sawdust. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Aiden. It's always great to talk to you. We'll see you again very soon.
I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Business Handmade podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at MarketSpace Vendor Events or on our website, MarketSpaceVendorEvents.com.